Welcome back. This is Roy with AeroPro Coaching, coming to you with episode number 15. And we're going to start this episode with a kind of a story, and then I'll introduce our topic. What we're going to start to do is give stories and tell, give you some insight on what we deal with our athletes and how they deal with it. They have different challenges, and I thought sharing some stories and how we handled it with actual athletes would help a lot of people. I think that just like when you're in a classroom and they say, hey, ask a question, and there's no stupid questions, there's no stupid scenarios or issues that people deal with. And if you ask that question, if you ask that question, you'll answer it for like 80 other people who don't really want to talk about it. So we're going to start to talk about some of the issues that our athletes deal with on a day-to-day basis as endurance athletes, and whether it's a racer or an event person. You just want to do better in the group ride. Maybe some of these stories or things you can relate with, as I think a lot of people struggle with some of these issues. So I'm going to be picking different athletes, highlighting them. I won't be using their names just because I didn't get specific permission from them, but I will share their stories because I think it's impactful and very helpful. So let me paint the picture of a couple different stories, or this specific story. So you're an athlete, and let's just say you're a road racer. You race your bike, and you put in all this training week after week. You're putting in training. You're doing the interval work that your coach is assigned to you, or maybe you're grabbing some stuff off the line, and you're putting together a training program on your own. And you do all this training, and you see your power numbers improving, and you see that you're stronger than you were a year ago, and you're putting all the pieces together as far as to become a stronger rider. You're putting the miles in, the time in, and you're focusing on recovery and nutrition. And then 3 weeks down the road, you have a big race coming up, and you've put in a good block of time and training. Maybe you're coming off the off season, or maybe you're coming off a period between a race, and then In a few weeks you have a big race coming up. And then leading into those weeks, a lot of people tend to mess up going into the last 2 to 3 weeks of a big event or a race they want to do well at, is because they start to freak out a little bit, and they start to look, go online and look for the things that maybe give them the edge, and then they start trying new things. They go away from what they've been doing, for these several months preparing. Maybe they try to find some supplements that may give them a boost, or they buy a new helmet, or whatever the case may be. And then the last 7 days, they really start to freak out. And then during this period, they start to, if they have a coach, they start to contact the coach and question the coach on, have I been doing enough? I don't feel right. My knee hurts. My back hurts. Whatever. Should I try this? Should it be carb loading? All this crazy stuff. And then all of a sudden that athlete really starts to freak out, and then they add more training volume during that last week, and they go off maybe their normal regimen. And then the day before, they start doing some weird stuff with their nutrition. They start to add stuff. They have a restless night of sleep. They're focusing on the results of the race because they want to do really well in this race. And this goes for really, it's not particular to road racers. This can be a runner, this can be a triathlete, can be anybody who is performing in a big event, whether it be a Grand Fondo as well. Because we're putting a little pressure on ourselves to perform on a stage. So and we've done all this work, right? We did all this training, we've put in the time, we sacrificed time away from our families and time away from our job. So we really want to do well, because we're equating the results as the benefit from all the work, right? So the cost was doing all of this training, and then the benefit is the actual result, or getting on the podium, or winning, or whatever the case may be. So we get up in the morning after a restless night of sleep. Maybe we are up and tossing and turning, and we get up that morning and we start sucking down hydration because we're worried that we're going to cramp today. And we're drinking, and then we're obviously using the restroom several times, and then we're slamming goos in other foods and things because we think that that's going to help us with nutrition. And then we show up to the start line. And at the start line, here's the thing that we typically hear. Hey, so-and-so, how's your training? And so-and-so goes, well, I'm just using this as a training race. Or, yeah, I'm not really in shape, but I'm out here anyway. Or, the course does not suit me, but I just want to have a good day. All these different things that go on during the pre-race. And then there's lots of chatter, lots of nervous talk. If you're a triathlete and I welcome you to go into a transition area before a race, and one that you're not racing, and just observe the different tendencies people have and the nervousness that goes on during one of those events. And then same thing with road racers. Before a big road race, you'll see guys doing all these odd things, saying these things, and setting themselves up for really not a good race or giving themselves those excuses beforehand. And then they line up, and this particular athlete lines up, and then the gun goes off. Maybe they fumble a little bit trying to get clipped in, even though they've clipped in 1,000 times, and they're off. Instead of being at the position that they wanted to be, they're near the back of the group, and then they're hammering it really hard, and then they're freaking out, and then all of a sudden, 30, 40 minutes into the ride, they're already spent, their heart rate's jacked through the roof, they've already unloaded their best efforts, and by about an hour in, they're dropped off the back, and then their race is done. And then they go back, and they get in their car and they leave, and then they're pissed. Didn't go the way they wanted. They look back and they start to feel sorry for themselves because they put all this time in and effort and so forth, and they look back at their power numbers. They look back at the numbers of the race. It uploads to Strava or Training Peaks or whatever, and it's not even close to some of their best efforts that they put in training. Their training efforts were a lot higher. The efforts that they put in were lower, or maybe their efforts were really high, like super high in the beginning, like insanely high. But obviously, in road racing, as in most endurance sports, if you start off like up like a ball of fire, then you're going to crash and burn as you start to get into the endurance segment of that, or later into the race. So this athlete crashes and burns, and then instead of sitting back and going and trying to self-reflect and see what happens, they blame it on their training, and then they say, well, I need more training, or I need different training, or I need more hours, I need to get stronger is what I hear a lot. I need to get stronger, I need to... And they don't really look back on the root cause of what happened. And this is where I'm going to kind of introduce today's topic, is anxiety and race anxiety. And this is something a lot of people struggle with, whether they admit it or not. Everyone has some sort of anxiety for racing or events. Some people despise it so much so that they avoid doing certain things. They avoid tackling an event or something because they despise the feel of the anxiety. It doesn't, it's not a good feeling for them. And race anxiety can cause paralysis. It can cause you not to perform to your potential. A lot of the different factors physically and mentally happening during an anxiety, your heart rates tend to elevate. You can cause tension in the muscles, which causes several different things. And then a lot of people who have such bad race anxiety or anxiety can't even recall accurately what happened in an event. A lot of times as a coach, if somebody finishes, I'll ask them what happened, and then they'll tell me, and then I'll look at their racing file. They upload, their computers will monitor their efforts, right? It monitors their heart rate and their cadence of whether it's a run or a bike, or the power output or pace. And what they're saying they're doing and what's actually happening is two different things. And that's because they're so stuck on this anxiety. It causes paralysis. It causes them to not even understand what's going on. They're not in the moment. And that's really a massive limiter for many, many people. So I spoke with an athlete this past week, and they are a road racer. And one of the things they struggle with is anxiety. And that anxiety stems from a lot of different things, and we'll touch base on that in a minute. But the anxiety is so bad that they're unable to perform. Like, they are a really good athlete. The efforts that they're putting in, I just took them on as a coached athlete. And the first few 3 to 4 weeks when I coach someone, I kind of test the water, see what kind of athlete do we have here. Do we have an athlete who, and I kind of rank them A, B, C. A are the athletes who do everything to the letter. If I say do 26 minutes of an interval, they do exactly 26 minutes. They follow everything to the limit. They right there 100%. I never have to go into a file and wonder what's going on. I know it's picture perfect every time. And then there's the B athlete who does about 80% of the work. You know, whether the life gets in the way or maybe they just, you know, they're just an 80% person, which is good. A lot of B is a good place to be. And we have C people who are in the 60 to 70%, and then the Ds really don't do anything. And I'm not sure what the Ds do when they hire a coach. I think they're doing that thinking that that will give them a sense of motivation or maybe that the coach will make them better just by osmosis. I really have no clue why D people hire anyone. But as a coach, my job is to get the D people to C and then get them to B. There are very few A's. Like, we don't want to, A, B, C, D is just my ranking system. It doesn't mean they're a subpar athlete. It doesn't mean they're, you know, I could have a person who's at the front of the pack of a group winning races and be a D athlete. I have plenty of those. I got guys who hire me who are really good. They do well in their event. Maybe they're, you know, they're racing against people who maybe we'll call them sandbag kind of people who these guys are really good, but they're D's. They don't do the work. But they're winning their event. Now, as soon as they step up to upper levels and they start leveling up, then those D people end up losing, and then eventually they get frustrated and quit the sport. But that's a topic for a different discussion. So as a coach, my job is to get the Ds to be Cs and the Cs to be Bs, and I like to try to get everybody at a B. And that doesn't mean they're just doing interval work, things like that, but that they're, you know, they're progressing in a certain way, they're doing certain things, they're compliant, they're listening, they're coachable. So B people are coachable, C are on the edge, and D are just not coachable. So, and that's fine. Not everybody needs to hire a coach. And certainly in these days, you can, you know, buy plans all over the place. So, but nonetheless, this athlete's an A level coach or athlete, and they're doing everything right, but they've struggled. They've struggled to really turn up some, they've turned up some decent results, but to turn up the results that they're expecting. And one of the areas that they used as their test, believe it or not, was a group ride. And so they do a weekly group ride. It's a pretty spirited group ride, lots of Cat 1 racers in this ride. And they don't perform the way they think they should. They get out there and they freak out. The anxiety builds up. Things are happening around them that they're not controlling, but they're letting that affect their mindset, and they're unable to perform to the level that they know they can. And they even said it, you know, people, I get out there and a gap's opening up, you know, a separation opens up, whatever the case may be, and instead of closing it down or instead of staying relaxed and letting some others close it down, they freak out, and then eventually the gap grows, and then they get dropped off the back. And to them, to their words, they're like, it's not even hard. The effort's not even hard, but I have all these other things going around. Somebody barking at me. Somebody saying, close the gap. In my mind, I'm rehearsing, here we go again. Like, that's a big one. Like, you get into a situation that you're familiar with in an event or a race, and you're continuing that same pattern. How many out there, you know, find out how you're not performing. Find out how you're failing, and see, is there a pattern there? Is it happening the same way over and over again? If you're a road racer, are you always missing the break, but you have the power to be in it? If you're a triathlete, are you always cramping because maybe you're going out a little too hard on that bike leg, or maybe you're thinking that, hey, if I train more, that my run will get better, but in all reality, the run form is the issue. So again, that's a lot of people that race anxiety, or the anxiety clouds their judgment. But I think if you sit back and maybe think about it a little bit, and so this anxiety is causing a lot of these issues. So So she tells me, this athlete tells me their feeling and this anxiety. And so then I ask them a little bit about their past, their history. And one of the things that she said that is very common with people who have high levels of race anxiety, she said, growing up, I was an athlete. And when I was an athlete, I would perform very, very well in practice and like top, like a star in practice. But when I went to the event, the game or whatever, I fell very short. I became average. So I was above average in practice, but I became average when it came to game time. And this is what I call being a gamer. So there are people who are practice warriors. They're really good at practice, really good at training, but they can't take it to the game. And to be a gamer isn't, you don't have to have the greatest power. You don't have to have the strongest run. You don't have to have the best of everything, genetics. Being a gamer is a mindset. It is. It's a mindset. And so anxiety ruins that. Anxiety ruins a lot of people's performances, taking it from the practice field to game day. And it happens quite often. And unfortunately, for triathletes, I feel for them because they're putting a lot of time and effort. They're practicing for 20 hours a week. They're taking time and money. They're traveling great distances, and they're lining up. And some people lose right away in the swim. They freak out in the swim and everything. From there, they let that issue, that negativity, follow into the bike, and then the bike becomes a mess. And then on the run, they're just walking half the run, and there's their 16-hour Ironman. So, I think that the anxiety part, getting that anxiety under control, and using some different tools. Because we're spending 20 hours a week training, but how much time are we spending on the mental side of it? Are we not admitting to ourselves that we have anxiety? I don't want to. People will go, I'm scared, or whatever it is. It's anxiety. You're having an anxious moment. You're anxious about something. You're having anxiety about something, and now we need to figure out how to fix that. And there's no amount of training that's going to fix this. There's none, right? We'll call it the deep dark web, right? Like, these are things that most people don't really address in their training programs. They address, run form. They address run form. We address, power meters. We address nutrition and hydration. But how many times in your plan are you racing? Are you identifying race anxiety and fixing that? And I would say very rare, right? Like, it's probably a rare occurrence that we are addressing race anxiety. And then you're like, well, how do we do that? So for this athlete, we look back on her past and we said, okay, well, in training, she did well. But when she took it to game day, she did not. And I said, well, why do you think that is? And she put a lot of pressure on herself. So she put pressure on herself to perform. She cared about what others thought. She had other people, saying that she should perform a certain way, and she wasn't. So that created more pressure. And the more pressure you put on yourself, the greater that anxiety will be, right? So if I put a ton of pressure on myself, then that anxiety kind of continues to build up. Now, it's good to have pressure, right? Some people perform well under pressure. And they say, I perform well under pressure. And not typically those people understand the concept of anxiety, how to handle anxiety, and then how to not let that affect their game day. And those men and women are gamers, right? They how they perform in practice is how they perform in a game. And there are a lot of people who don't perform well in practice but perform great in a game. And the reason for that is because they don't put that pressure on themselves. They have a level of confidence when they show up to know that they can perform. And they may not have done as much work as you, right? I'm sure we all know that person who does 10 hours and we're doing 20, or that person who rides 5 hours and we're riding 15, who beats the crap out of us during the games. And that game could be the group ride, your buddies on the World Tuesday ride, that can be Strava, that could be anything, whatever it is that you compete at, right? It doesn't have to be an official event. But that person does, not as much work, and then they beat us. Like, they're beating us because, again, our anxieties, our level of stress, the pressure we're putting on ourselves is causing this issue. And that's, again, we look back with her, and that's what we found out. And so that's what you have to do. You kind of have to sit back, think about your past. When you were a teenager, when you were growing up as a young kid, what happened? Like, were you in sports? Maybe you weren't in sports at all, so you're not familiar with what we're about to talk about. Or maybe you were in sports, but you had a bad coach, and that coach told you you weren't good, and you sat the bench the whole time instead of being out there participating. Because, you know, hint to all you coaches out there, no one's fucking winning a world championship at 10 years old. But we're scarring 10-year-old kids because we're telling them X, Y, Z, and we're sitting the bench instead of letting them out there and playing and teaching them and being a really good coach by teaching them how to take the practice that they're doing and bringing it out on the game field. Instead, we're looking for the best athletes and we're recruiting them because we're not good coaches, and so we want to cherry pick the better players and then we want to sit the rest. But good coaching is taking people and pushing them to do things they never thought possible, not taking people who are good and making them, you know, putting them out on the field, right? That's not coaching, that's just cherry picking. And there are some people who are genetically gifted or who are wired differently at certain times of their life to be a good athlete. So nonetheless, so coaching, like maybe you ran into a bad coach, maybe you had somebody who installed some negative thoughts, and so those things are, you know, you harbor those things. I know that happens quite often, but you have to sit back and realize that that happened, right? Once you realize that happened, you're like, oh yeah, there was this guy or this lady coach who, you know, berated me or didn't let me play because I thought I wasn't good, so maybe I'm not. And so then you go out and you practice more, you practice, you do really well in practice, but they still don't let you in, right? So then you're like, well, maybe I'm not that good. And then that obviously is going to carry over. Believe it or not, when you're young, that stuff stays with you. And then maybe in high school, the same thing. You tried out for something, you worked really hard, and you didn't get it. So now you're an endurance athlete, you're doing this for fun and pleasure, but unfortunately those same feelings come back, right? So how do I handle that? Well, the first way to handle it is to know that it's happening, to know that that's one of the reasons potentially that's causing the race anxiety, and to know that, you know, that you need to just be aware, and that your self-worth, that your value, that what you're doing is not tied to the performance of a triathlon, to a road race, to the results. Your worth is, in my opinion, the worth is the value is in the work ethic, like how you present yourself. Like, hey, I train 10 hours a week because I want to set that example of I'm a fit person, I'm still competitive, I have goals, I want to do things that others aren't doing. And I'm doing it for myself. Like, I don't care if I never win a race. I don't care if I ever place, because my value, my self-worth isn't tied to some trophy or placement or the opinion of others, right? A lot of people, they'll have opinions of you or your performance, right? They'll have, hey, why didn't you do so good? Like, mind your own fucking business. You know, I had a great race. It was my best race ever. I just didn't get on the podium. So I've had many of those where I have had a great race, my best race ever. I felt great, did what I wanted to do. It just didn't fall my way, and I didn't get on the podium. Doesn't mean I'm not good, right? I don't tie that. I used to. My personal issue is I used to do that. I used to tie my self-worth to a placement, a podium, and then I would be bummed for many weeks. I try to train more, but eventually, you know, there's only so much training you can do. And then you fall into a pattern of training, losing, and then the way I broke the pattern is I just realized that what I was doing is it's tying that I value my self-worth into this placement, and then I was like, no. And then I went out there and just played, had fun, get out there and worked, raced, and then I started having really good results because I took the pressure off. And then, so that was my advice to her. I was like, hey, we see, you know, these are the things that happened. Now what we need to do is take the pressure off. You need to go out and have fun. Again, your value is not the value of you as a person is not in the result. It's in the effort that you're putting into the work. And I think that's profound. Like, I think that the value of you as a person, the value of an athlete, is not the placement, but it is of the work that they put in. When I look at athletes and I work with them, I value them as A, athletes when they put the work in. B, athletes, put the work in. C and D, start to lose that value. It's never on, hey, they got 10 podiums this year, they're an A athlete. That's not how I look at it. I look at it. The value to me is in the how they present themselves. It's just like a job interview. You go in there and you look a mess. Your resume is a mess. You can't answer. You can't convey your message clearly to the person interviewing you. You're not an A athlete. Now, you present yourself well. You're sharp. You answer the questions. Then you become an A athlete. So that's it's not whether you're getting a podium or not. It's and that's how I perceive it. And I want that my athletes to know that. So every time I talk to them, I don't ask them how did you. I ask them how you felt. Okay, how did you feel? That's always the how did you feel. And if they said I felt great, then good. If they said I felt like shit, then we have to talk about that. You know, why did you feel like shit? And then a lot of times they go, well, I took third. I'm like, well, that's not a feeling. That's a result. How did you feel? Did you feel like you were drowning because everything was going so fast and everyone was so strong, or you were cramping, or whatever the case may be? So for this athlete, you have the first tip I gave them is look back on your past, write it down, put it in a journal, and then realize that value is not in the result, but value is in the process. The value is in the process or how you present yourself. And because a lot of times I think if we think about it, we do all this training and we forget the great times in training, the camaraderie with others, the group rides, the suffering, which I think a lot of people think is bad, but I think it's good. Like, I think that most of us are looking to accomplish something, and a lot of those accomplishments happen in the training, in the suffering of that training, not on game day. So that's, I think that we need to look back on that and understand that the process sometimes is really the most important thing. And then, so I do all this work, and I understand, coach, that my value is not tied to my placement or a result, and you know, and that's going to take some work for me to do that. But the first thing is realizing you're doing it. So if you start to see yourself going down that rabbit hole of, hey, feeling sorry for yourself and all that, kind of sit back and reflect on the race. You know, look back on that, and if you have a coach, your coach should be able to help you steer you and guide you in that. They can be your Sherpa through this situation, and a lot of people, they feel sorry for themselves, and they tell them, why am I doing this? Why am I doing all this work? And blah blah blah. I'm like, okay, well, if you weren't doing all of this, what would you be doing? And then, do you, you know, let's assess your training. Is your training, you know, where it needs to be? Are you doing the right things in training? And then let's be realistic. You know, is a guy out there doing 30 hours and you're doing 10 and they're genetically gifted? Okay, well, then you took fifth, not too bad, right? But then you have a buddy who took first. Well, maybe they're not going against people who are as gifted as your group of people that you're going against, right? So, and then comparing. Comparing is a horrible thing to do. You should just compare yourself. Like, how did I feel? How am I doing? How is my progress to myself? Not how is my progress compared to Bob down the road or Billy or Susan? Like, who cares? Like, who cares about that? We don't know their situation, right? They may be miserable, right? They may have a miserable life, so they take it all out on training, and then they go out there and perform really well. But while you have a happy, well-balanced life, and you have your kids and your family and work, and you can only give a certain amount, so fifth is all you can get, or tenth is all you can get, or just finishing is all you really care about, then again, it's your own personal perspective. It has nothing to do with anyone else. Be selfish with that. It's not your wife's. It's not your husband's. It's not your friend. Your journey is yours. It's no one else's. Okay. Now, if you want to be a national champion, great. Then put that pressure on yourself. You want to be an Ironman? Put that pressure. Pressure is good. Pressure forces us to get outside our comfort zone. If we don't cause pressure, then we stay inside our routine. And when we stay inside our routine, we're going to get the same thing over and over again. You know, in training, one thing we do is we add stress to the body through a workout. So that's the stressor, the actual physical thing going on. And then there's a strain that's caused by that stress. And if the stress is good enough, or excuse me, if the stress is great enough, it causes that strain. And that strain causes adaptation. It forces the body to adapt. Without enough stress, there is no strain and there's no adaptation. So same thing goes with your mindset, and same thing goes with this. If you have to push yourself every day, if you continue to do the same thing every week, I do the same group ride, I do the same 5K with my buddies, every year I do the same races, and you get into this routine, and you want to mix that up, Routine is the evil of success. So routine is definitely the evil of success. Yeah, you'll have short-term success in that routine, but over time, that will cause you to just plateau, and things become stagnant, and then eventually they go in the reverse direction. So we always want to be progressing, progressive with our mental game, progressive with our training, progressive with what we're doing in life, always moving forward whenever possible. And then the second tip I gave to her, and for me it was an easy one, for her she didn't realize it, but visualizing how you want this thing to unfold, like how do I want things to happen. And she didn't really, it's funny, she used visualization in the past in other areas of her life, but not in sport or not for this particular issue. And I said, the best thing to do is visualize yourself taking it from the practice field and bringing it to game day. And this is something that is very, very powerful, but it takes a lot of practice. And spending about 10, 20 to 30 minutes in a quiet spot and thinking and visualizing and relaxing your mind, and spending time thinking about the performance, how you want to perform, you know, how you want it to feel. So for her, we're using we're going to use a group ride to teach her, that's her practice for game day. So she's going to go through the routine of visualization. She may do it 3 or 4 times the week before the group ride, and she's going to sit back and she's going to visualize herself lining up in this group ride, getting, you know, making the right moves, how she's feeling, when she starts to feel anxious, how she wants to handle that, how she wants to react to this, going through the corners, working in and out of a large pack of people, the speeds, the efforts, the burning of the muscles, the heart rate elevation, the drinking of the water, the sweat. Really want to take in, if you can, all 5 senses, like really feel that visualization and see it and spend time seeing yourself doing something and having it come out as a positive versus a negative. So sometimes people visualize and they visualize negativity, and I'm like, that's crazy. So visualization should always be a positive outcome. When you start to see a negative outcome, replace that with a positive. Like, I always get dropped at this point. I replace it with, okay, I know this point is going to be hard. This is where my heart rate elevates. This is where there's a corner that I don't like, but I'm going to take a good line. I'm going to hold my line. I'm going to go into it nice and loose, and then I'm going to accelerate out of it, and then my heart rate's going to go up, and I'm going to let it get under control. I'm going to close in on the person in front of me. I'm going to get behind them in the draft, and then I'm going to suck the wheel until I recover, and then I'm going to freaking attack. So I'm very descriptive of that. You know, I get very, very, very granular. I look at little pieces of it, even as much as the road surface, the feel of my bike, the grips. The more realistic you can make that visualization, the greater of the result will be. And people will laugh about visualization. They all think it's hokey, but it's super powerful. Like, the mind is very powerful. Like, right? Think about this for a minute. When you're around somebody who's very positive, upbeat, not fake, they're not a fake fucking person. Like, I hate them. And you know it. You know the fake person. But I'm talking about the person who's real, like the person that is genuinely a positive person, motivating. And when you're around them, you can feel it, right? And then after you speak with them, you're motivated, right? Because you're around them and you're motivated and you want to be around them more, because that motivation bleeds off, that energy bleeds into you. Like, some people have this, some people don't. It's because they have that positive mindset outlook, but it's real. It's not fake. You can feel the fakeness of people. Then you have that person who's negative, the Eeyores of the world. They're like, oh, here we go again. Those people also, you can feel that, right? You can feel that negativity. You can feel that not positiveness. And then you leave going, man, that person's negative, and it bleeds into you, right? So that's because that person talks to themselves a certain way versus the person who's a motivator. They talk to themselves a certain way. So our self-talk, the things that when we're alone in a car and no one else is around and we tell ourselves, we believe. If you believe that you're a subpar athlete or that everyone else is better or that your value is tied to the results that you get, then you are that. You become that. It's very powerful. Self-talk, self-speak is one of the most powerful things probably on the fucking planet. So in visualization, you have to visualize clearly what your intentions are, what you want to do, and use all those senses. The other thing I do is I write it down too. I write down during the day, like if I think that I want to visualize about something because I've thought of some negative things, I'll write it down. If I'm going through a funk, whatever it is, my business, whatever, relationship, anything it is, I'll write it down, sit back, and then lay back. Because you can visualize about everything, how you want your family to be, how you want your success to be, how in your job, in your career. And so it's not just a sport-specific thing. Visualization is super, super powerful. But a lot of people don't do it. We spend a lot of time on nutrition. We spend a lot of time on training. We spend a lot of time searching the internet for the best, most aerial thing. But how many people spend an hour visualizing a week? But yet, it's the most powerful performance-enhancing drug. People come to me every day and they say, "Hey, coach, what supplement should I take?" And they're looking for like beet juice and all this other stuff. But visualize. Sit back, get inside your head, and visualize. Like, people don't do it, right? People don't spend the time. I guarantee of the people who listen to this podcast, maybe 10 visualize on a regular basis. I can tell you when things are not going well for me and I stop visualizing, that's when issues happen. And then, so how do I do it, coach? So, well, visualization's tough. There's a lot of different ways to do it. But the way I like to do it is find a quiet spot. Either sit down or lay down, relax my entire body. I did this a long time ago at a wrestling camp. Relax my entire body, try to relax your mind, and then start the visualization on what you're focusing on that day. If I'm working on a race, I from the point I wake up to the point I get onto the start line to the point I get on the podium, I visualize every little bit of it. If you know the course, if you know if it's a crit versus a road race versus a time trial, there's different cues. Crits, obviously, you want to be smooth through the corners. I want to have a higher cadence, higher leg speed. It's going to be intensive, where a road race is going to be less intensive, but there are going to be periods of hard and periods of making the break or making the right move. So I want to visualize myself making the right moves. And again, I use all five senses in doing that. Taste, hear, sound, sight. Feel everything. I want to feel it all, just like if I was at the event. And same thing if you're a triathlete, if you're going into if you're going into a job interview or how you want your family to be, how you want your kids and all. You know, visualization is super powerful. So again, you want to take that time. Now, the first time you do it, you may do 10 minutes, you may fail at it, and not it doesn't, you know, manifest the results you want. But I promise if you continue to do that. So for this athlete who has anxiety, what we're doing is we're practicing visualization, what she visualizes, and taking it to a weekly group ride. And then if she can perform well on the group ride, then we have to take that to the next level, which is in a race. And the race is going to be it's going to be even greater, right? The pressure is even greater, so the visualization needs to be even better. A lot of people just visualize for race time, but you have to practice visualization. And so by practicing it for an event like a group ride or something that is maybe, we'll call it, you know, a 6 on the scale of 10, 10 being a race day, then that gets the mind, the body used to doing this, and then we need to adjust the visualization. So she comes back and goes, "Hey, I still had it. This is, you know, I still had the feeling of anxiety. It was better, but it wasn't exactly where I needed to be." Then we take the time to go over that and adjust how she's visualizing. What is she doing? Her self-speak. What is she telling herself in the visualization? What is she focusing on? Maybe we have to focus on a little different area. Because visualization isn't just about sitting back, thinking through it, and being done, and seeing yourself on the podium. Like that visualization, you have to buy into it. Like, so much so that you feel like you're there. And you can do it. Great athletes do this, and that's how they become gamers. That's how they take. There's guys who, the person who is doing really well in the game, but not in practice, their mindset is strong. They have a strong mindset. They're very confident. Like I coach a guy who's a multinational champion. He's very, very confident, super confident. He always thinks he's going to win. He's always telling himself he's going to win, and he wins. He wins a lot. He's not always the best. He's not always in the best shape, but he wins. So So I know this stuff works for a fact because I've been around athletes. I've dealt with athletes all my entire life, and I've seen the power of visualization. So race anxiety, two tips to resolve it. One, look back at your past and kind of pick out those things that are affecting or causing this anxiety and know that they're there. Know why you're doing what you're doing, right? Some people may not have had a negative. They may have had been a very successful athlete through their whole career. So they're putting that pressure on themselves, again, in this quote-unquote hobby. So maybe that's not good for them, right? They've had pressure their entire life. Why make the hobby the same pressure? Now, doesn't mean they don't want to produce. Doesn't mean, I think, again, presenting yourself in a certain way, doing the work that you need to do, being an A and B athlete, and then going out there and performing your best. Now, if that's a win, great. Some people, they were sitting the bench. And so they actually are gamers, but they can't strip away that anxiety to become one. So this podcast is about stripping away that anxiety, letting your true champion out, like letting that true potential out, because a lot of us have this massive potential, and it's being roadblocked by anxiety. So don't let it be the roadblock. Don't let anxiety be the limiter. And it's something that, I want to say it's easily changed, but it is definitely something that you can overcome versus genetics. You know, you can't overcome genetics. That's just not going to happen. But you can overcome. Doesn't mean in genetics you can't train hard and do well. You don't need genetics to be a great athlete. It's been proven over and over again. But with anxiety, it's something that is changeable. It's something that you can work around. It's something that you can overcome, and you can let that... that cannot be your limiter. That we can actually make anxiety your strength, and by doing visualization and all that, it can become a strength versus a limiter. So that's all I have for episode number 15. And our next episode, we're going to be talking about a Cat 1 racer and how his failure in 1 year became success the next. He went from being the 20th person across the line at the state crit championship, and this year he ended up beating some national champs, some really good competition, and he won two state championships, Cat 1 racer, winning the jersey. And he's my buddy Bruno, and a lot of people think, hey, you know, he's your buddy, is he, you know, I hear this all the time, is, does he really do the stuff he tells you tell him to do? And he does it to the letter. Last year he didn't. He fought me, he did a lot of group riding, and then this recent year he's done every single thing. We implemented new tools and tactics, new training, a new mindset, a new way of approaching training and racing, and he's a great athlete. He was a great athlete before this. He took fourth in nationals last year, so he wasn't some candy ass. He was actually a really good racer, one of the strongest guys around in the Southeast, when he won the Southeastern Regional Championships. But he wanted to do better. He wanted more. And I told him he could do more. He's a great athlete. And we're going to talk about a little bit about his journey from the last year, from where he's turned his cycling around, his training around, and his mindset and how he did that. I think those are the things. Now, we'll get in a little bit on the specifics of his training, but more so on how the tools, the tactics, so everyone can take those and use them and implement them in their training. So I think it'll be a powerful story from a guy that isn't some newbie who we just snatched the low-lying fruit of lots of power. He's already a super powerful athlete, but how do we get him from 20th to first place, winning back-to-back state championship jerseys and racing against some really high caliber athletes? So that'll be our next podcast coming up. Hopefully in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll go ahead and develop that one and get that one out for you. And then lastly, I'm doing a shameless plug here. So we're doing a master class. It's a class not for masters, but it's a class talking about nutrition and recovery. One of the greatest areas of recovery is nutrition. And what I did is I put it together in a way that is not teaching a diet, but it's teaching ways to monitor and track and handle your own diet. You can implement this with any diet, any other person out there. I'm not a registered dietitian, but I am a coach who handles and dealing with tracking and monitoring and adjusting people's nutrition to get performance. So what we did is we put this together, and what I would sit down with my custom athletes and teach them about nutrition is what we're going to dose out over 8 weeks. And it's going to include six webinars where you get to time with me. You're going to get a workbook that's going to take you through each and every step of how you should monitor your training, track it, and progress it. Because a lot of times we know what to eat, we know what good eating is, but we just don't know where to start, and we don't know how to stay on track. And so this is going to be a way for you to stay on track, how to keep yourself accountable, and how to do it in a somewhat easy fashion, because it can get very complex. You know, are we going to tell you exactly what to eat? No. Are we going to sit there and dig into your pantry and all that? No, we're not. Will we answer your questions? Yes, sure. On the webinars, you can ask me, is, you know, a certain food better than the other? And, you know, sometimes I'm going to say it doesn't matter. A lot of us get really too technical, but in all reality, if we keep it simple, then it's something we can do. One philosophy I have with nutrition is if it's something we can't do for a lifetime, then I'm not sure it's a diet for us, right? If I can't be keto forever, then should I be keto for 6 months? And I think that are there times when we want to be race, you know, we want to have a race nutrition versus an everyday nutrition, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about fueling for events, recovery, fueling for everyday work. Outs, fueling for your daily life, fueling for people who are doing Ironman versus a crit versus strength training. So we're going to talk about a lot of different diets and things out there. This is more informational and something that you can implement each week, and then when you're done, you have it forever. Like, you can keep this forever, and then you'll be we're going to make you part of our private. Once you get through the 8-week course, the benefit of it or the reward is going to be part of our private group that allows us to do some Q&A and answer questions and help keep you accountable and let us know how you're doing on your nutrition journey. But we're not, again, I'm not teaching you the fast diet, the keto diet, the paleo diet, the gluten-free, any of these diets. Like, I do a specific diet that I'll share with you. Doesn't mean I'm telling everybody to do that diet, but I'm going to give you just different tools, techniques, and things out there that I know work. I practice this every day with my athletes. So I'm giving to you what I give to them in an 8-week course. So, and that's going to run you $499. It's 8 weeks. And if it doesn't work for you, if you don't like it, if you don't find value in it, then we are going to give you your money back. We don't want your money. If we don't earn it, we don't want it. That's always been my philosophy. If I don't earn it, I do bike fitting. If I don't do a good bike fit for you and you don't like it, I'll give you your money back. I'm not here to take your money. I don't need it. Doesn't mean I don't want money, but we're here to earn it. Now, I want to put a good price tag on this because it is 8 weeks. It is a lot of time invested by me. I'm giving you everything I've learned over the last 10 years of coaching, and you're going to get a really nice workbook that is put together in a professional manner. You're going to get six webinars. You're going to get a week-to-week progression. You're going to get worksheets to do. We're going to give you everything you need to do to track your own personal diet. And by the time you come out of it, you'll know what to eat, when to eat, and how to eat it each and every step of the way, whether it's a race, whether it's a week non-race supportive, like with your training versus supportive for race day or race week. And we'll talk about nutrition during a race and event. And some of the things that I know have worked, I mean, we've coached over 80 athletes to do Ironman. So we kind of have a good sense of nutrition and how to handle that and how to track that for each athlete. Every one of them has completed the Ironman successfully. So one of the biggest tests of Ironman is on the nutrition side, and we've been pretty successful at doing that. Am I a registered dietitian? No, I'm not. So I'm not going to be able to help you with very granular specific things. If you have Crohn's disease, if you are diabetic, if you have some kind of eating disorders, things like that, I am not the person for you. But I am going to teach you, right, if you do have these things, how to track it, what the nutrients that you need potentially for event and things like that. And then a registered dietitian can take it one up for you, and they can really drill and zero it down. I am not that, and if that's something you need, I would hire them. There are great sports nutritionists out there. I'm not one of them. I'm just practicing this, giving you the information that I know has worked for the athletes that I've dealt with and handled over the last 8 to 10 years. So look that up, and I'll be posting on that soon. Other than that, I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast on anxiety and found lots of value in it. If you like the podcast, share it with your friends. Like it on whatever device you're listening to. And then next one will be on on our guy who went from 20th to first. And a lot of us, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to go from 100th place to 50th or 50th to first, because that's our personal goal, not because we're putting value on it, our self-worth on it. That's not our value. We're not, you know, our personal self-worth isn't on a placement, but it is on the process and how we represent ourselves. And that's all I have for you from AirPro Coaching. As always, everyone, up your watts.